All right, I want to share a really brief drash, okay? I've been cutting it further and further in the last half hour. And I want to ask you, what can you think of an extremely embarrassing experience in your life? Usually we don't have to think real hard. I just saw someone turn around and remind someone else of theirs. And so I actually don't like to remember mine. What I end up remembering more than embarrassing moments are stupid moments. I dislike stupid moments more than embarrassing moments. Embarrassing moments happen. You know, life happens, but stupid is, you know, like the time when the very first car accident I ever had, I rear-ended a guy in a conveyor, if you remember those little things from back in the day, and I was at a garage getting my dad's little Ford Escort station wagon fixed. We should have just torched that Ford Escort at that time. But I had never, ever, even though my parents had a garage, I'd gotten my driver's license in the summer and my accident happened before winter came. I have never pulled in a garage and pulled out of a garage. But there, after the guy finished doing my work, replacing the grill and one of the headlights and the bumper guard on the front passenger side of the car, I wrote him the check for $100 it was to get the car fixed, because Dad didn't want his insurance going up. He wanted me to pay for it. So I got in my car and was backing out of the mechanic's garage and ripped the bumper guard, cut the wheels too sharp as I pulled out, and it caught the rail of where his garage door went up and down, and it ripped the bumper guard back off that he had only put on about 25 minutes earlier. So to the day, as long as my dad had that car had no front passenger bumper guard on the front. So that's one of my most stupid events. Embarrassing, I try to forget those. But in this story of the Book of Esther, and so we're taking a break because this weekend's a holiday. And so no Joshua today, we get Esther today. This guy who expects to be honored walks into the king. He's been disgraced twice by Mordecai. He's been snubbed really seriously the first time. And when it happened the second time, he went home, told his wife and his friends, and they said, "You need to go to the king tomorrow in the morning and have this guy bumped off." And so the next story is the king, Xerxes, Ahasuerus, can't sleep. It just happens to be that night. He can't sleep. They have the old newspapers brought in to read him the news of his kingdom, and he finds out that this Jew Mordecai has done a really valuable deed for the kingdom that the king didn't know about, and so he asks someone, "Who's out in my courtyard?" And they say, "Well, Haman's out there." So get this. Haman had told his wife and friends, and they suggested, "Well, tomorrow you need to go to the king and have Mordecai bumped off." Obviously, Haman he couldn't wait until the next morning. Obviously, there's no time sequence exactly given about when the king can't sleep. He has insomnia. But there he is. He's reading the old kingdom minutes of his kingdom. And obviously, it's still the middle of the night. But yet, evil Mr. H is still out there. And he couldn't sleep either. He thought, well, I'm not waiting till the morning. I'm going to go tonight and wake up the king and tell him to bump this guy off. And so the king asks Haman, now why is no one on this side of the room? Okay, let's practice. Haman, okay, that's a little better. I was only hearing this side of the room. He asked him, so what should be done for someone who wants to yichar, the king wants to honor? And so Haman, of course, thinks he's talking about himself. If you read the text, it says he said it to himself in his heart, bilibo. Well, of course he's thinking of me, because it seems like when someone gets a little honor, all they want is more and more. And because the king had promoted Haman, yeah, I know, he shouldn't have done that. But it only gave him a really big head. So Mr. H told the king that, well, you should put his robes on him, dress him in the clothes of the king, and put a crown on the horse, you know, use the king's horse and lead him through the streets, saying this is what the king wants to do for the man he desires to yakar, to honor. And so the king said, go do that for Mordecai the Jew. Perhaps it was still the middle of the night. Just hours earlier, Haman had a conversation with Zeresh and his wife and his friends. They had plotted to build a gallows that was 75 feet tall. You know, can you imagine this? Is this hyperbole? Is this some sort of exaggeration? 75 feet, they're going to build a pole, 75, just, as I heard one time, just swinging from a crane, You know, cranes are like 75 feet tall. You know, that's like seven stories high. And so they want to put Mordecai up there swinging from a crane and not singing in the rain. And so they're... Mordecai will die. But now the plot has changed. See how fast things change? God can take the designs and the thoughts of the wicked and turn them on their head faster than you can say any kind of hocus-pocus line. God brings transition to things quickly if that is the plan of the Most High. I love the way that the Psalms describe the way that those who are evil better be careful, because sometimes they will get caught in the very trap that they build for someone else. And this is what is happening in this story. So Haman leads Mordecai through the streets. And because the king told him, well, go do that for Mordecai. You do it. And so he ends up honoring Yichar, the very man he wanted to destroy. Don't you just love the irony of Bible? There's a story in the Midrash that as they walk through the streets, Haman's daughter is up on the balcony of their house. And of course, she thinks that it is Haman leading leading Mordecai. Very good. I was waiting for you to do that. That it would not be her father leading Mordecai, but it would be Mordecai leading her father. So she took the chamber pot, and she threw it at Mordecai's head. Of course, she had figured wrong. It wasn't Mordecai leading her father. It was her father leading Mordecai. So she hit her father in the head with the chamber pot. And when her father looked up and she saw him, she was so frightened and scared, she fell off the balcony to the ground and died. It's just another story in the Midrash to explain the dishonor, the shame that is going on in for wicked Mr. H. This is a kingdom that knows about yakar, that knows about honor. If you read Esther chapter 1, there's the story of this great big lavish banquet. And I'm not just talking about your Friday night, you know, TGIF. This is a TGIF that goes on for 180 days. This is, you know, that's 6 months. Some people think they throw a big Super Bowl party. Well, they haven't seen party until they've seen what's gone on in Shushan. And so there they are in this city, and they've put their dancing Shushan, and they are having a humdinger. And so, and it says that the king is he's serving wine in gold goblets, but each gold goblet is different than all the other gold goblets. Could you imagine having enough gold goblets to throw a party for 6 months so that every wine goblet that you serve to all your guests on all those days are entirely different? I mean, that's a lot of gold goblets. The text says that he does this to parade his Tiferet V'Kavod, his beauty and his honor, his glory. This, by the way, ties to this week's Torah portion where the priestly garments are said to be given to Aaron and his sons for those very two things, Tiferet and Kavod, for dignity and splendor. The king wants to show off his yakar to all his friends. The historians say that this was actually perhaps the planning meeting in 482 BCE when this kingdom planned a really a big military campaign against Greece. And it didn't exactly go the way they wanted to in the end, about 3 years later. And if you read closely, you'll find out that it's actually about 4 years later when Hadassah Esther, is chosen as queen. So perhaps that's when that battle between Xerxes and his enemies to the west occurred. Maybe that's why he was throwing this party, was trying to woo his legionnaires and his vigilantes to go fight his battle for him. In any case, Haman has to lead Mordecai on the king's horse around the city. We're told that when this is over, Mordecai goes back to the city gate. Mordecai then takes off the king's robe, and he once again puts on his sackcloth and his ashes. He's gone from sackcloth and ashes in chapter 4 and 5, to the king's robe and back to sackcloth and ashes. Just because he had this experience of Yakar coming from the king, he recognized that it was not the deliverance that he and Hadassah, otherwise a.k.a. Esther, were looking for. They needed not just a momentary experience of Yakar. They needed transformation. They needed rescue. They needed deliverance from the Most High. Well, I don't have time to tell the story. And tonight, you'll see, I'm sure, a ruckus play describing it at 9:54 Columbia Road in Loveland. Be there at 7:10-ish. It's on the left-hand side. And so to jump to the end of the story, there is victory. We're told in chapter 8, verse 15, that Mordecai is once again dressed in royal robes. It's amazing to see the change of clothing that goes on in this story. So check that out and throw that out next time at Torah study when Rod talks about clothing. There is a great change of honor and dishonor, shame and clothing going on in this story. And it says that the city of Shushan is sameach. They are rejoicing for what God has done to save the Jews. And verse 16, it says, LeYehudim hayita, for the Jews there was Orla v'simcha v'sason v'kar, the words on the four posters, the banners out in the entry hall that we all worked on for the last month. There was Orla, light. There was Yakar, honor. There was Simcha, joy, and there was Sason, gladness. We're told in the Psalms that God turns our mourning into gladness, Sason, into Simcha. God changes our fortunes. Did you know that the name of God doesn't even appear in the book of Esther? It's the only book in the entire scriptures, including the Brit HaKadoshah, the New Covenant Scriptures, that doesn't mention the Most High. But yet we see God's faithfulness at each step of this very ironic story, that little things like Mordecai overhearing a plot to kill the king, or a sleepless night of the king that happens to be the very night that evil Mr. Haman wants to destroy Mordecai, and not only Mordecai, but all of Mordecai's people. This guy is willing to give up his entire fortune. And if you read closely, you'll see that in chapter 5. He's willing to give up his entire fortune in order to destroy the Jews. We see what's written on his heart. And in the end, when Haman had fought for honor, what would you do? For the king says, how should I honor? How should I bring honor? At the end of the story, who is it that has the honor? Is it the king from his big party, Esther chapter 1? Is it evil Mr. H that wins it for himself in chapter 6? It's God's people. Chapter 8, LeYehudim hayita yakar, honor. For the Jews, there was honor. They won, through God's provision, what Haman had fought and tarried and pulled and struggled for. It was almost as if the king was not, in the end of the story, the one that had the greatness. At the end of the story, Esther chapter 10, it's Mordecai that's described as great. Not Haman, not even the king. And so, what does this demonstrate to us? We're told that we can't see God. We feel like we live in Esther life. The book of Esther, the Megillah, is the Jewish word for the scroll of Esther, the Megillah, the whole Megillah. Megillah is a word that means scroll. And in the whole Megillah, God, as I said, God isn't even mentioned once. It's not even hinted at, besides a couple little passing thoughts, maybe. But sometimes we feel like we're in the middle of the whole Megillah. God isn't seen in our life. Hebrews chapter 2, verse 8 and 9 says that God has put all things under His feet. It's speaking of Psalm chapter 8. And God has put all things under His feet. But the text goes on to say, but we don't see everything that God has put under His feet. Sometimes we just don't see it. We don't understand it. But the preacher to this group of Messianic Jews goes on to say that though we can't see what God has put under Messiah's feet, we can see Messiah and the honor that God has given to him. The honor, yakar, that God has, although it wasn't written in Hebrew, the honor that God has given to Yeshua. As I read that this week, I couldn't help but think of the book of Exodus. We don't see God in the book of Exodus, but we see God's hand in really awesome, amazing ways. Hebrews picks this up. We don't see God always putting things under Messiah's feet the way that God promises, but yet we can capture a glimpse of honor. We can capture a glimpse of beauty and glory when we glimpse Yeshua. How do we partake of that honor? 1 Timothy chapter 1, verse 17 says that Paul is making this grand statement about God. To him who is unseeable, to him who never dies, be glory and honor forever and ever. All honor belongs to God. It doesn't belong to Xerxes, Ahasuerus. It doesn't even belong to those that try to grasp it, that try to scheme their way into snagging the honor. All honor, 1 Timothy chapter 1, verse 17 says, belong to the eternal one who cannot be seen, who is never ending, never dying. To him belongs the glory and the honor. In Yeshua, we can grasp, we can participate in that honor, just as the Jews in Shushan, to them they had light and honor. If I had more time, I'd take you to Romans chapter 2, where it says, to those who do good, I'll just mention it, to those who do good deeds, they will have, does anybody know what Paul says? They will have honor. To those who do good, they will have honor. Who do good deeds, they will have honor. Interestingly, to the Jew first, and then also to the non-Jew. So even if you're not Jewish, you can participate in Esther chapter 8, verse 16, where it says, to the Jews they had light and gladness and joy and honor. Rabbi Paul in Romans 2 makes that applicable to non-Jews as well. To those who do good and receive honor first to the Jew and also for the non-Jew. finally, if you know Messiah, if you have that kind of relationship with the Most High, you have entered into this. You have seen Yeshua, as we mentioned from Hebrews chapter 2. Let me finally, in terms of this salvation honor idea, 1 Peter chapter 1. 1 Peter chapter 1.
And I'll try to quote this one.
Verse 6, you rejoice greatly, even though now for a little while you have been distressed by trials. The life of Israel, the continuity of God's promises, were literally on the line with Esther. Esther knew what trials was. Mordecai knew the depth of what they were dealing with. And Peter talks about the trials that we experience. You rejoice greatly, even though, if necessary, you've been distressed by various trials. These trials are so that your true metal, the true value of your faith, which is more valuable than gold, may come to light in praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Messiah Yeshua. Though you do not see Him, you love Him. And even though you do not see Him now, you trust Him. And you are filled with simcha, joy that is glorious beyond words. I can't help but then, again, think of the connection to Esther, who knew what trials were. If I perish, I perish, when she went before the king. She was willing to stand and do the right thing, as Paul mentioned in Romans 2. The ones who do what is right will receive honor. She said, if I perish, I perish in this trial. Peter says, these trials are so that the true metal of your faith, which is more valuable than any metal you can think of, gold, for instance, that the true metal of your faith may come to light in honor at the revelation of Yeshua. And again, there's this idea of not seeing. Though we don't see Him, we love Him. Though we don't see God in the book of Esther, we know that He's leading. We understand that each step was coordinated by the Most High. And even though you do not see Him now, you trust Him and you are filled with joy that is glorious beyond words. What I've wanted to do is tell the story of just one of those words out there on the banner. I picked honor, yakar. It was something that the king had. It was something that evil Mr. H wanted to grasp. In the end, it was the people he wanted to destroy that got the honor he was trying to obtain. But the same is true for you, and the same is true for me in our congregation this very day. Though we do not see God in the book of Esther, we understand that He has revealed His honor. The Honorable One has revealed His honor in Messiah Yeshua. And that honor is what is working in our lives. Though we go through trials like Hadassah and Mordecai and the rest of the Jews there in that empire exiled from their homes, in the trials that we go through, God is no less present. Though we don't see Him, though we do not understand the path that we are walking. We continue to walk right. We continue, as Romans chapter 2, to do good works. Those who do good works will receive honor to the Jew first and also for the non-Jew. And though we go through these various trials, we understanding that they are, that we, our faith is being perfected to bring honor that is beyond words. Though we do not see God, we love Him. And though we don't see Him, we trust Him. I just don't want Purim to be a ruckus celebration. And by the way, I want you guys to yell and boo even louder than that tonight. I want you to have a whole lot of fun. Stomp, scream, yell, hiss, boo. Eat a whole bunch of homantashen. Send gifts to others. By the way, Purim, side note, different sermon, but Purim is the Jewish gift-giving holiday. The book of Esther says that Purim is for shalach menot, sending gifts. There's all kinds of things to delight in on this holiday. But I want you to remember that just as God was true in bringing honor ultimately for Israel, so it is available for us. The Honorable One, 1 Timothy chapter 1, gives it to Yeshua, Hebrews chapter 2, so that we can receive it, 1 Peter chapter 1.